me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Fulfilling my own destiny. Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great, big, vast world of ours. This is Purpose Talk Radio, and I am your host, Cindy Freeman, where this is the last broadcast after about 4 years on the air that we will be having on Monday. We will be changing to a Friday afternoon show. Instead of being Mondays, 3 Eastern time, we will be going to Friday at 3 Eastern. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific. I'm sorry, let's try that again. Good Lord. Let's try that. It will be noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, and 8 p.m. in the UK on Fridays. Time changes are not existing. Just the day. So, just to let you know, and that will start with the first week in February. I might do something Friday yet just to get the audience moved over to this Friday, but we'll see how that all goes. The song you just heard was I Am Who I Am by the group True Trinity. The vocalist there was Jillian Clark, and the co-writers on that are myself and Rachel Martinez. You can find them at truetrinity.com, TRUETRINITY.com. And if you want to know more about Purpose Talk Radio, this is the place where we have guests who are living their purpose and want to share with you how they came to know what it is, how they got to achieve it, and anything that they might be able to offer you in you achieving your own purpose. And you can check out more about us at PurposeTalkRadio.com, P-U-R-P-O-S-E. TALKRADIO.com. If you wish to send me an email, you can do so at Cindy@PurposeTalkRadio.com, CINDY@PurposeTalkRadio.com. And probably the most reason that anyone might want to do that is you hear something you like and you want to be a part of this show. You want to share with our guests your own purpose and how you came to achieve it. The other way is we do have a marketing package for anyone who might be interested in marketing your product or service to those who are looking to serve and discover their own purpose. And let's see, what else do I want to share with you all today? That's probably the main stuff of it today. Our guest today is Anita Miranda. Hopefully I said the name correctly. I forgot to check on that before we started. So I will bring her in onto the air right now, or in this case, actually, she might bring herself. My health is a little compromised today, so we're doing things a little bit different. I am broadcasting from home today, and that's okay. We're doing so the chat room is not open today, but there are two other ways that you can get a hold of us or join the discussion. The first one is to go through Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook, and I have pinned a post right to the top there. If you hear anything that resonates with you, please feel free to comment on that. The other way is if you are calling in on Skype, press 1, and we'll know that you want to be a part of our conversation. That will show up as a question mark next to your phone number on our switchboard. The other way is you can call in directly at 347-205-9074. Again, 347-205-9074. Again, if you press the 1 key, we'll know that you want to talk to us. Otherwise, you may just sit there and listen. That's great. We can do that as well. So, hello, Anita. I hope that you are there now.
I am, Cindy. I'm feeling so successful. How are you?
Cool. I'm all right. Okay. And yourself?
Not
You're
bad.
You're on the East Coast then.
I'm on the East Coast. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's beautiful and sunny, and we haven't seen that for a while. It's actually above freezing here. Quite pleasant.
Okay. probably pretty similar to us. We've had this above freezing the last couple of days, and last week, 2 weeks ago, it was the coldest it's been all year. Now, it kind of competed with January last year by just a degree or two, but pretty much had some sub-zero wind chills and things too. So I get you. It's great to have the sun again.
Yes. It is. It's there.
No. It's there.
So, cool. So I'm actually feeling quite successful that I was able to get us both, you know, speaking at the same time, and it looks like there's even someone who's called in. So when the time comes, you'll coach me on how to bring them in.
Ah, yes. If there's a little question mark next to their name, we will do that. If not, they may just be sitting there and just listening that way. So that's fine, too.
Okay.
They may just want to listen. So let's see. I need to switch to my speakerphone so that I can get to, oh, good. My little thing went away for you. So let me pull this up to be able to do your bio. There we go. Like I say, we do things as they need to be done these days.
Commitment.
The purpose today is to have a show, and I'm making sure that happens. anyway, so, you know, like I said, Anita is in the East Coast, and she is a teacher, vocalist, writer, and storyteller, living in actually the Hudson Valley area. Her life and work are greatly influenced by the singing and storytelling tradition of her childhood, where family and close friends gathered daily around the kitchen table to share good food, stories, and music. As a child, Anita never expected that she would teach or write. Undiagnosed reading and writing disabilities made school a struggle, and she limped along with the help of a few close friends, barely graduating high school with C average. Hey, that's still pretty successful as far as I'm concerned if you got disabilities.
You get by with a lot of help from your friends.
There you go. You know, I've been singing that this afternoon, too, which was funny that you quote that song, too.
But her first attempt at college was 1972, and Anita found that she could not meet the rigorous reading and writing demands. It would be more than 20 years before she would graduate from college, the same year her own son graduated from high school. This time, she succeeded. I'm sorry?
We can hardly hear you.
This time she succeeded thanks to the kindness of a community college professor who helped her to understand that her unique learning challenges did not reflect her intelligence nor define her as a person. A word processor instead of a typewriter and nightly help from her teenage son assured that this time Anita would find her writing voice and hone her reading skills. Anita now has a master's degree in education and wrote her master's thesis on teaching writing to middle and high school students. She currently teaches reading and writing to beginning elementary students at Ramah School in Wappingers Falls, New York, and teaches child development to aspiring teachers at the Westchester Community College in Vahalia, New York. I hope I said that right, too. Additionally, Anita continues to share her love of music and story by singing classic jazz and in public venues in the Hudson Valley area. In November, she released her first audiobook CD, a recording of her work from Storytelling Blog. The Coffee Stories musical memoir from Cold Spring and Beyond, a CD compilation of story and song that tells the stories of small moments, is in the lives of people from a certain time and place. So there you go. And I know one of the quotes that Anita lives by and used as her inspiration is a Maya Angelou one. And I just love that woman. You know, she was such an inspiration. But it is, one isn't necessarily born with courage, but one is born with potential. Without courage, cannot practice any other virtues. You have to be kind, true, merciful,
Cindy, you're fading away, honey. Would you reread that quote?
Sure. One isn't necessarily born with courage, but one is born with potential. Without courage, we cannot practice any other virtue with consistency. We can't be kind, true, merciful, generous, or honest. So, yeah. Maya is an awesome, awesome person. So I hear that very often.
Yeah, I think courage is like at the heart of a lot of things, you know. That willingness to take a risk, to try something, you know. It's pretty essential, but it doesn't necessarily come. I think it comes naturally in the beginning, and then we get pushed down. You know,
right?
That didn't go well, and you sort of start to lose that courage. You know,
and when other people tell you,
you can't
do that.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
You can't do that. Yeah, you can. Why not? You know. You know, like today, it's like, okay, are you willing to try this so that we can be on the air today? Sure. Kurt say, sure, because I put all this PR out for the show today, and I want people to hear me. I think
probably
has something to do with it.
I think you do. You have to go with what's working in the moment and make the best of it, right? I think, you know, I think that's about, like, leading with whatever strength you have at any given moment, you know, and that doesn't come easy if you have struggled with learning disabilities. You kind of wonder what your strength is, you know. So yeah, I like those reminders that tell me that I can do something. Yeah, you know, I have a few signs up in my house that says, you know, there's a place at the table. Take your seat. You know, it's okay, you know, just because you didn't come to something in the traditional way that a lot of people came to it, just because you can't speak to all the technical aspects of writing with all the references to grammar that a seasoned English teacher will speak about it, which that doesn't mean that you don't have something to offer. So it's been a journey of giving myself permission to say that, you know, what I know and what you know is worth sharing together. And it's in that sharing together that we find out what we need to know next, you know, what's important.
Very true. So, you know, normally the question that I ask people, and, you know, you've had a lot of different challenges and time frames that we described through the bio. But what was the defining moment where you finally said, hey, I'm going to teach, I'm going to write, I'm going to be a singer? What came to be that time for you?
I think they came at different times. The singing was when I was really young. You know, I'd hear my mom, who, she was a totally at-home working mom. You know, and she took care of her family, her extended family, and her outlet for doing that was singing as she worked. You know, so it was just this very heartfelt music pouring out of our house all hours of the day and night. And I used to follow her around and, you know, try and sound like her, which I never could do, you know, but I just knew, I always knew that was something that I wanted to do. And then that storytelling aspect of my family was always there. So that seemed to happen naturally. But when it came to the schoolwork, the writing and the reading, I went through my entire elementary years just wondering what was wrong with me. You know, I mean, really, like, how not smart can you be that you can't do this? And, you know, I don't think I had teachers who understood that there was something happening. So they either assumed that I was not trying hard enough or unable to get it. And they preferred to think I just wasn't trying. And trying is such a, you know, an odd word. You know, I understand the idea of effort, but this notion that you're not trying is kind of ridiculous just because you can't get it. So that was a really defeating time for me. It influenced a lot of things. I didn't look at people in those days. You know, I looked down a lot. I felt ashamed. It was a big weight. But when I went away my first year to college, thinking that there was a very kind woman at my school who was the speech pathologist, and I didn't receive speech services from her, but I used to just find reasons to get out of my classes and hang out with her, and she was nice enough to let me do that. And so I decided that I would be a speech pathologist. So when I got an acceptance to what was then the State University College at Brockport, New York, I went. And, of course, I was totally ill-equipped, could not, you know, by the second year I was dropping all my classes. I took a whole semester of Fs. But while I was there, I kept trying to write letters home or write stories about things and send them home, and my parents couldn't make heads or tails of them. And so, you know, the feedback I was getting then was, boy, you can't write. But I knew I had to. Like, that was the beginning of me knowing that I had to write. So that was when I was in my 20s, and it wasn't until just a year ago that I made my blog public. It took me until my son was 18, so, you know, I was about 45 when I got my teaching certification. It was a long journey to get there.
So you were originally, you know, if you had your first year of college in 72, that meant your elementary and high school years were the 50s and 60s. So, you know, people didn't know about learning disabilities, talk about me stuttering, you know, whether it be anything, reading or writing or dyslexia or ADD or any of that stuff back then, or they didn't know how to diagnose it. Like you said, they just put people as being lazy or, I hate the phrase, dumb or stupid. You know, it's like they didn't think, well, there could be something really wrong here. Every kid isn't the same. You know, they just put everybody into a box. And, you know, that's unfortunate.
I think it is. I mean, I think that everybody did the best they knew how to do. Like, I had caring teachers, you know. But they didn't help me understand myself, and they didn't help me understand who I was as a learner. You know, and those are the questions that kind of motivated me to start taking classes in education once I started to figure out that there was something different in how I was learning. But initially what I did was I would go to community college classes I was living in California at the time, and just take music classes, you know, and most of them were singing classes because I couldn't read the music, and I couldn't get the notes to stay still on the page, and I couldn't figure that out. So I would take vocal lessons, join the choir, do those kinds of things. And so I was accumulating credits, which was a kind of a nice thing. And then a guidance counselor said, well, you know, it seems like you don't really want to get a music degree, but singing is an important component in early childhood education. Why don't you take a couple of those classes? And I found that I was really interested in them, in the conversations that were occurring in those classes. But, you know, following through with the reading and writing was difficult. So I got put into an English, or, you know, an early English class. Got some assistance there. And then from there I took a class in journalism. And I think I took it because I figured that we would be writing about something that we were currently reading, and that there would be such a direct connection, you know, that I would see a lot of the in print right in front of me what it was that I needed to write. And so it just seemed to make a lot of sense to me to try that. And that's the teacher who said to me, you know, you're intelligent about this. You can have this conversation with us about this content. Your issue is about the writing of it. And so she talked to me about how to use a word processor, to turn on the spell check and let it help identify, you know, things that were wrong with my writing only after I had written it. You know, she helped me learn how to cut and paste and move things around. And it's really unfortunate that I don't remember her name. I remember how kind she was. I must have been like in my late 20s at that point, and she was just step by step helping me pass that class. You know, I'll always be grateful for that. There weren't very many teachers who took that kind of time. There was also a early childhood teacher who, when I took my very first child development course, he kept encouraging me to keep talking about what it was that I understood about child development, because it seemed to be different. It seemed to have a different grounding than what was in the text, and he was interested in that. And he started to realize that it came from, you know, my own journey through being a young child, being more of a kinesthetic learner, having more musical or storytelling or, you know, auditory processing skills than I had visual processing skills. And so, you know, he was the first one who taught me about multiple intelligences, and that, you know, that IQ wasn't something that was a singular kind of understanding, but that you could be a child who leads with spatial abilities, or who leads with musical abilities, or who leads with kinesthetic abilities. And so, you know, he actually helped me identify myself as someone with ability instead of someone with disability.
Yeah, and those are the teachers that excel. Those are the teachers that make their kids excel. And it's not, you know, it doesn't have to do with, like you said, IQ or grades or anything else. I know a lot of super high intelligence people. I know Mensons. And to try to get them to write an intelligent conversation, for some of them, not going to happen. You know, they've got a dry sense of humor. They've got, you know, some of them can't really speak well and some can write well. You know, it really doesn't matter. The IQ, you know, they are the top intelligent people in the world. But that doesn't mean they have every ability that, you know, is supposed to be out there that people associate with being intelligent. So it really doesn't matter. And a lot of those people, too, their brain is racing so fast they can't put stuff down easily.
Right.
You know, so I get that. And, you know, that is so cool to have had those teachers and that inspiration. And I'm sure it had something to do with how you teach now, too. If you've, you know, you've had those role models of being able to pull some of that stuff out for you, that now you're able to pull that out of your students.
I've been toiling all day with an image of education being, you know, like a road well traveled, and but each person's journey is individual, you know, and I think that's really something that's on my mind about how we teach. You know, we are in community. You know, you're in a classroom, there's a community of learners with you. But access to each new skill that you know convey or help a child to construct is got to be from a place where a child is ready to learn, you know, that the place that's individually right for them. And so those connections are really important, having a relationship, you know, with a student where you value and you understand who they are is a really important idea. I was introduced to a book called A Mind at a Time by Mel Levine, and it really helped me understand how he takes a look at, let's say, a writing skill. What does it take to write your name? And he analyzes the thousands of steps that are in your brain that are connected with just writing your name. And, you know, if you think it through, you can think a few things. You have to be able to see the paper. You have to be able to imagine the space that you're going to write in. You have to be able to hold the pen or pencil in your hand. You have to remember the form of each letter, what word you're writing as you're writing it, what letter comes next, you know. And that's just a few of the steps in the process. And, you know, what he'll say is that at any given point, the brain can, you know, just have a little, like, blip and not quite, you know, not quite remember what the step is. And those little blips happen to everybody in different ways, you know. And so that's just, you know, one way that we can think about how people learn. And, you know, and the other thing you said, which was really fascinating to me and so much guided the way I thought about teaching children, is that childhood is the only age when we demand and expect that everyone will be a generalist, equally competent in all of these areas, you know. But in adulthood, what we do is we specialize. And so, you know, no one would ask me to balance their checking account for them. That's not my skill. Although I balance my own and, you know, I pay all my bills on time and I can manage that, that's not an area of skill that you would look to me, you know, you wouldn't ask me to paint a mural, you know. And nobody thinks badly of me because of that, right? So, but if you have to ask, nobody would even think badly if, you know, you have a busy life and so you delegate and you have a housekeeper come in and take care of your home. You know, like that's a common thing that's done. But if I have a proofreader read my email before I send it, that's kind of considered lacking. Do you know what I mean? And so I think, you know, I think we need to rethink how people learn and why we have such a strong demand that that young learners be generalists that excel equally in every area. And why isn't it okay for some to be better at reading and some to be better at, you know, something else, and to get a little extra help with some of those other things as they're developing those other skills. Like, it should be no mark against them. It should be just the way it is.
Right, and that makes sense. So let's back up to the beginning of your journey. You know, back in grade school, you know, we touched on a little bit, but what was your elementary school like back then?
Oh, my goodness. I went to school in a little Catholic school, and for the first few years that I was there, it was 4 classrooms, 2 grades per class, so it went through 8th grade, and it was always taught by nuns, Franciscan nuns. And then at some point they expanded into the church hall to add not more grades but to spread us out a little bit more. So that was my first 8 years. And then I went to an all-girls Catholic school for 1 year and then transferred into our local public school where I finished out my high school.
So you said you were able to graduate with C's. How? I mean, what?
How,
yeah, obviously, you know, if you had all of that struggle going on that you didn't know what was going on, you had the family stuff. You know, did your family help? Did your friends help? Who helped you get through those classes at that point?
I don't know why I turned that off and it didn't stay off.
Hey, that's okay. You know, that's why this is not professional radio, so to speak. It's just professional. It's just professional enough that we can chat.
No, I know. So it was. I met a very wonderful friend who is still a friend when I was in, I think, third or fourth grade, and she kind of took me under her wing. We spent many afternoons doing homework together, either at her house or my house. Sometimes I think she just gave me the answers when things got too tough. Often she was able to sort of give me a synopsis of the readings. And things like that. There's a very funny story, which she doesn't remember, but I remember as clear as day, of my teacher calling me up to the blackboard and giving me a division problem to do. And it was something simple like 4 divided into a 3-digit number. And I just stood there for the longest time staring at it. And she told me I would stay there until I could figure it out or, you know, still God helped me see it or however it was going to work. And So after quite a while, my friend started whispering, put the two above the four. But she just started like walking me through step by step how I was going to get out of that situation and sit down. And so that's where the C came from. It, you know, I don't believe that I was really a C student at that point. I just got a lot of help and got by as best I could. I did read, though, you know, I mean, but it was like I was really compelled to read, like, Nancy Drew books. And so I would hide them under my pillow, have a flashlight long after lights out. I would have the books open, and you know, I might read two pages a night. And the first read was just to decode every individual word. And then the second reading through was to just sort of read out loud or whisper read to myself one paragraph at a time and then close my eyes and try and see if I could picture it. You know, there were all kinds of things that I was doing to try and get through these books because I was driven to want to read. So I think, you know, my parents were frustrated. They didn't know how to help me.
Okay.
You know, they wondered if I was lazy.
I was Nancy Drew and Henry Huggins, so I get it. It's like, at that time, those were those are the picture and the encouragement books. It's like, you got to figure this out. Hey, you know, so, yeah, I remember that well. And I, too, was the kid with the flashlight under the covers and all of that, you know. And, you know, for me, it was a different reason, but I guess not when I think about it. No, it was still the determination to read and get that done and go through whatever. And there wasn't enough time in the day to do the way we wanted. So I guess in reality, both of us had similar reasons, you know, to be doing that flashlight under the, you know, even though it was, you know, again, different people. So different roads.
Well, and reading was that wonderful escape. You know, like you can escape into someone's story. It wasn't your story. You could live another life where the struggles seemed different and more bearable. You know, so that was a good reason to read.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. I did do that a lot, and I still do that when I can. It's like, okay, just one of my favorites. You know, now I get my books on tape. A lot, and, you know, Escape to Tuscany. It's like, okay, where's this going to take me? Or Eat, Pray, Love, that takes me into these worlds that I can't get there right now for various reasons, mostly financial. But it's like, yeah, it takes me into someplace different that I'd love to be but can't. So, you know, I hear you on that. So the things that
and
you
I
read
think
now
that
you
motivator... I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to close that by saying I think it's a motivator for so many kids to learn to read. You know, just one of the things that became so clear to me is that we often offer kids books that are leveled, you know, to meet their independent reading ability. But if you're a delayed reader, those books are interesting to you. You know, and so you know, I take risks and say, let's read this book that's, you know, beyond your level, but so you read it with someone. So we echo read together, or you know, where your voice fades out, my voice will fade in, but we'll keep that motivation going, so that you're going to read. You know, what drives you to want to continue to read. So you start to look at how you're going to learn to do something in a very different way when you've had to struggle to learn it yourself. And I feel like that's given me permission to open up opportunities for kids that might not be standard.
Right. Yeah, and now we do have books on tape. We have Kindle. We have Nooks. We have whatever else that, you know, on the one hand, for some people, it's because they're too busy. So they've got their books on tape as they go along, and, you know, that works. For some people, it is because there is a reading challenge, and that's the only way they can read. You know, I still very often, even though I get the books on tape because of the eyesight stuff, I still often have the book when I can in front of me and try to read along, or I have it up on the computer and it's reading and I'm trying to read along, even though I know it's a strain. You know, it keeps me in the book
And, you know, that hard copy book, you know, people, some people say, oh, it's going to go away. And I don't think it will. I don't think it will, because there's still that, like you said, that kinesthetic even of touching a book that makes a difference for some people.
There was a recent study, you know, I listen to NPR while I'm driving here and there, and so I can't tell you exactly who did this study, but there was a recent study on reading from a Kindle as opposed to reading from a hard copy book. And what they were looking for was retention of information and reading with depth. And what they found out is that, you know, it, generally a Kindle reader will do much more of that kind of glancing through things and more of the rapid reading. They won't pause to say, that moment, you know. And that they believe there was something in just the tactfulness of having to turn the pages of a book that forces you to slow down. And it's in that slowing down that you actually, you know, start to reflect a little bit, start to ask yourself questions, and through that you end up with a better retention of what you've read. So, you know, we are becoming those screen readers, and we are, you know, I think it's reflected in the blogs that we read where, you know, it's the 10 steps to this and the 10 steps to that, you know, and everything is sort of condensed into bullet points and those kind of ideas. It's really nice to get into a good book, you know, that's got some depth to it. And even if you're listening to it read on tape, so many nuances are available to you in that reading that, you know, aren't available on a Kindle screen.
Right. And it's their interpretation of how they're reading it, too. It might not be your interpretation of that particular quote. You know, what word did you emphasize? What, all of that. So, it's an interesting thought.
I listen to a lot of books on tape, and I find myself pausing it to argue with the guy about how he read a particular line, or, you know, I don't think it means that. I think it means this, you know. But that's kind of being active in what you're reading, which is what we want children at school to do, right? Is to be active in their reading so that they can question things, that they can wonder how it connects to them, wonder what might happen next. All those things propel interest and keep you going.
Okay. So you get through high school, you tried college. It didn't work.
It's kind of so hard to recover from taking a whole semester of incompletes that turned to F.
Yeah.
That was a pretty wild, you know, at the moment when I just took them, it seemed like the only out, you know, was just to go. But now that I've, you know, when I got serious about going back to school, that was a major obstacle. But I ended up graduating with a 3.8, I think. So,
wow.
Managed to get around them. So, not that, you know, not that that's the, you know, be all end all, but there was some determination there.
Right. It still says you go, you know, to basically an A-minus, B-plus average there. You know, that's a pretty strong grade point average for doing that.
Yeah.
Funny part is I went through a grade school and high school with high grades. I got to college, and I started slipping. And it's like, why? What's going on? I couldn't stay focused on my work. I couldn't do anything. I found out after college, I was diagnosed with ADD. Which was fine because grade school, like you, I had a Catholic grade school upbringing, but I had a very rigorous schedule. It was this class, come home, play outside for half an hour, come in, do your have your snack, go do your homework, go to your practice. It was, you know, and stuff couldn't, if no TV until the homework was done, whatever. Often I wasn't watching the TV with the family because it was taking me too long to do my homework, but it was what it was. You know, it would take me forever to read history. I can't get that to save my soul. Dates, times. You know, I got to college and I could memorize the phone numbers of different departments. I was on the journal. I was on the newspaper. Like you, I had my journalism because I wanted to be a writer. I can memorize the phone numbers of all the departments. They didn't need a directory. I remember them. But dates? Not happening. So, again, it's what again, the motivation, the various reasons? We don't know.
Right.
So, do you ever have
somewhere
official...
I'm sorry?
Yep. No, go ahead.
Say it again, please.
No, I said, so that's, that
sorry,
can be various motivations again.
Right, right. I think, too, you know, one of the things that I question about education right now and this move towards, you know, really synthesizing everything into this Common Core language and this way of teaching a Common Core and everything being somewhat the same is that one of, I think one of the obligations we have as teachers is to help people understand their own unique learning path, you know, and to help them actually moderate that path for themselves and do some self-regulation about it. So, you know, it may very well be that you might not notice your, you know, that there was an ADD or attention deficit issue in your early learning because all of those decisions were made for you and, of course, you followed the path. But that didn't mean you knew what how to make the path. You know, that didn't mean that you you knew how to construct the path for yourself. And so, you know, one of my goals as a teacher is to help kids understand themselves as learners so that they know they can identify what they need. They can identify what's next. They can, you know, they learn how to break things into steps on their own. And it's, you know, so often if a child comes to a morning meeting, you know, in my classroom, and I teach kindergarten and first graders, and they haven't completed a conversation that they were having with a friend, and they don't seem to be able to settle in, you know, I just ask them, do you need to take that, you know, do you need to take a moment and finish that? You can go out in the hall and do that and come on back in when you're ready, or can you make that adjustment now? And I'm not making them wrong for having the conversation. I won't tolerate the conversation while we're trying to have, you know, read a book aloud or do something else, but I will give them an option to figure out how they're going to deal with it. And I think that that's the helping, you know, had somebody asked me those kinds of questions, what do you need to do to be ready now? I might have been able to say, I need for the letters on the page to stay still, you know. I need, you know, I need to, you know, I don't know why things are rippling right now. Where I don't understand why one is always one, you know, in a number, but letters and two is always two and one plus two, you know, equals three. But when I'm looking at the word was, why aren't we pronouncing it was? Because I did learn the, I did learn those phonics. So why aren't they working? You know, like I would have been able to ask those questions if people had asked me what was going on. And maybe then it would have been more obvious as to why it was hard for me to make those connections. We just assume kids are going to make them, you know, if we don't give them opportunities to sort of let us know what they need and what they see and what's important to them.
Right. And I bet you've had kids go both ways. They've gone out of the classroom and some have just kind of, oh, I'm sorry, just kind of settle it, right?
Absolutely, but no one wants to leave for long. Yeah, no one wants to leave for long, you know, because what's going on in that classroom has a lot of pull. So, you know, they don't want to miss a story. They don't want to miss, you know, a reading of the morning message. They don't want to miss any scheduling things that are about to happen. So, you know, they want to be there for it. So they figure it out quickly, and either they, you know, choose to sit next to someone else so that they don't continue that conversation, or they go outside, have it, and come back in. But they start to develop strategies for it. Or they'll say, can I come in a minute? And that's even better, you know, when someone can identify ahead of time that this is really, like, I can't let go of this idea quite yet. Can I please finish? Well, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and there are those times, you know, there's a... Right, there are those times if we're on our way to the art studio, if there's a, you know, fire drill, those are like, okay, you know, we're all moving right now, and you'll just have to set that aside. And that, too, is a learning tool. But I think we don't trust kids enough sometimes to, you know, to figure this out for themselves and to self-regulate. And I think this self-regulation is really important. I'm going two directions in what I'm thinking about it right now. When I teach at the community college level, I often have kids who have just graduated from high school. And when I give an assignment, I give an assignment that has, you know, a research question in it and a reflective piece of it that they need to evaluate for themselves. And they'll be asking me, how will they know when they get the right answer? And, you know, I realize that it makes a lot of sense to them to ask that question because they've been graded on one right answer. But when you're talking about child development, you're talking about, you know, which I teach at the community college level, you're talking about developing a theory of something and an understanding of it, and there isn't a single right answer. So they're very stymied by this. It's like it throws them into a total, you know, tailspin that, you know, and I say, well, when you're satisfied with your answer, and you've demonstrated to me that you've looked up some sources and that someone else who studied this and researched this can agree with you, then you should turn the paper into me and we'll talk about it. And if I think you need more, I'll tell you. You know, it's like I won't just grade you badly because, you know, I'll give it back to you and give you prompts so you can figure out what's next. Well, they've learned to trust me to do that, and they've learned to trust themselves, you know, to actually construct an answer that makes sense to them and is justified in the research. And that's a huge tool that they didn't come to my classroom already having. So I'm not sure that the way that we're teaching right now prepares kids for, you know, jobs that maybe we can't even anticipate, careers that don't seem to be lasting so long, you know. People change jobs more regularly than they did. So, you know, you have to be able to synthesize information, to research, to ask questions, and to make sense out of things. And I don't know that our Common Core is going to take us there. It remains to be seen, but I'm a little skeptical. I was also thinking the other part of this I was thinking about is, when I was doing my research into writing my thesis, I relied heavily on a professor who teaches writing and studies writing and researches writing and how writing develops. His name is Peter Elba. And I was fortunate enough to be able to communicate with him while I was writing my thesis, and he read a couple couple takes at it, and he would say to me, well, you're not going far enough, or you're not asking your question deeply enough yet, and I'd go back and write more and more. And when I was finally satisfied, I sent it to him. And I remember one of the things that he said to me along the way was that you need to trust students to know that they're going to learn to read and write. And, you know, parents need to understand this too, because when a child is born, one of the first things we say is, you know, they start crying, and we say, just wait till they start talking back. We anticipate language. You know, they you know, start to roll over, and we say, just wait till they're walking. You know, we anticipate that too, but we don't anticipate reading and writing and math in the same way. We ask the question, what happens if they don't? And so he's saying that there's something in this basic trust, that if we provide the right environment, kids are going to go from step to step to step. And it's in my experience that they do. They don't all do it in the same timeline, but they definitely do.
Oh. Interesting.
I feel like I'm talking on, but I get so excited about this, you know, because it's...
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah. It really is at the heart of how we learn, who we are, you know. And I guess since I'm so passionate about it, I guess I do know it's my purpose, you know.
Right. So what did you do between those first years of college and being able to discover this in the second years of college and being able to turn it into a career? Because you said you're off that like 20 years. You know,
yeah.
Where you raise a family and your kid and everything else. But, you know, don't want to use the phrase just a mom because I don't believe that's just a mom deal. But, you know, you were looking for some kind of career going into college other than a mom. So what did you do in those years?
I took a few detours, you know, as a waitress and some other things. But eventually I ended up taking some community college classes at San Luis Obispo in California, and they were vocal-related classes. And a folk singer came through and did an artist-in-residency program, and we formed a connection, and he was looking for someone who was available to do some travel with him, but also schedule performances and do that. And so he gave me an opportunity to do that. And so I spent several years on the road with him, and during that time I did some singing. I did a lot of, I learned how to, you know, do the booking, he was wonderful. His name is David Baumgarten, and I'll always be grateful for that time that we spent. And I actually developed my own student show. And this was exciting. And then from there, I met my son's father, and you know, I came off the road from doing that. I had my son when he was a couple of years old. I had enough community college credits by then that I opened a small in-home preschool. And from there, when he went into kindergarten, I applied for a teaching assistant position because I had enough credits for that. And I took a teaching I took an assistant position in the public schools, and from there was recommended as an extension to half-day kindergarten teacher. I didn't need a degree for that. It was a PTA higher position, and I did it for like over 12 years. And they supported me to go to school and complete my degree. So that was how I got all of that done. So I taught full-time during the day and took, you know, one or two courses at night until I completed my degree and got my Washington State teaching certification. And then from there, I taught kindergarten.
So you're one of those Seattle folks, huh?
One of those people who landed in Seattle for a significant amount of time, yeah, over 30 years.
And kicked their butts in the football game this weekend. Well, not really, just by one point.
Yeah. Wow.
I was bragging on the Green Bay Packers last week. I mean, I didn't get to see it because I spent the day in bed. But, yeah, my parents called at one point, and they're like, well, it looks like we're going to have these Wisconsinites in Arizona in a couple weeks. And, oh, man. And it's like, well, your friends are going to come. Somebody's going to come, right? And at that point, it was like 16-7 after the third quarter. I'm like, I don't know, guys. Don't count stuff. They were that far behind the game before, and they, you know, they pulled it forward. So don't count anything yet. So, you know, I congratulate the Seahawks. And, you know, I have to do that since, like I said, I kind of went all over the Packers last week and, you know, played my Packers song and everything. So, yeah, I get it.
Seattle's they're a big football town. Although I have to say, it's not something that I followed, but I was aware of. Yeah, we were watching the game here.
Yeah. So, okay, let's see. I don't know what else I have to ask you except bringing in at home to what where are you now? Your CD's out. You know, you're singing, you're teaching, you're doing what at this point in life?
Yeah, you know, I have a, you know, I used to think it was going to be a 3-prong stool, but it's more like a 5-prong stool now that supports me. So I teach, I teach at a small independent school in Wappinger Falls, New York. It's called the Randolph School. And it really is a home for me, and you know, it supports me as an adult learner, and it also allows me to teach kids in a way that I feel is authentic. So it's really a pleasure to go to work every day. And then I have a tutoring business, and I tutor kids in mostly reading and writing and some early math skills. And then I also I teach at the community college level for Westchester Community College. I teach child development. And then the thing that I do solely for myself is write and sing. And I, you know, sing every month at a little restaurant in Cold Spring, New York, where I live. And it's a once-a-month jazz standards evening. And what's really fun for me about doing it is that I have this just killer band that works for me. I've got Lou Scott on bass, I've got Steve Raleigh on guitar, and they are wonderful together. And they allow me to bring in some other vocalists, and they're able to support them too. So it's an evening of my music, and then I get to share the mic, and it's lovely. And then the other thing is that my son this year helped me to post my blog, and it was his Christmas gift to me a year ago Christmas. And why that's so important to me is that I've never been willing to let anybody look at my printed word. You know, I've always story told, I've always read it, but I've never let people look at it before. So that was a huge step for me. And I realized that it was an incomplete thing because I envisioned every story that I wrote on my blog as having a musical component that went with it. And so this summer I turned 60 and I decided to give myself a 60th birthday gift. And I recorded the songs and the stories. And it's called The Coffee Stories Musical Memoir from Cold Spring and Beyond. So, you know, you can access it by going to my blog, which is www.thecoffeestories.com. And, you know, it's a whole new way for me to, and a whole new outlet for me, having the CD and having the blog. And it makes me realize that learning doesn't stop. You know, it's a huge learning curve. And unless I'm walking that learning curve, I don't feel like I'm really, really present in life. So it's very exciting. So that's what I'm doing. That's where I am. And thinking about, you know, the next 6 years and when I'm 66 and maybe don't want to get up and go to work every day but want to have another avenue of you know, working and being with people. And so I think this is the next, you know, one step in that journey towards creating another way of supporting my life. And you've opened a door that hadn't occurred to me, you know, that we could actually have conversations about this, how we learn and how we travel life. That's a really nice gift that you've given. So I appreciate this.
Thank you. Yeah. I keep looking for co-hosts for Purpose Talk Radio, too, so that there is more than one day on the air, because I believe people do need to know more things. So that's just another, I'll throw that out there, you know, you never know. You know, people, like I said, the verbal word, I always thought I would be in print. I never, ever, ever thought I'd be doing radio at all. It was my late fiancé's thing. It was his. He loved it. He wanted to do it. It was the last job. You know, it's why he moved away from this area, you know, before he died. And it was like, okay, you're doing what you need to do. Go for it. You know, and I never dreamed of it. So you never know where your path goes and what things there are. Like I said, after 4 years, I got to change from a Monday to a Friday just because I got class. But I don't want to give up the show. You know, because it's too cool.
Right. You know, I haven't stayed conscious to the switchboard. And there is a call. Shall we bring it in or is it too late?
Yeah, let's take a chance. Unless
it's
a 714 area
know.
Code.
It's,
but we'll bounce it in.
214. All right, here
That's
we go.
That's fine. I'll bring him in.
I'm doing my best to try and bring it in, and it's not changing. There it goes.
Hello. Area
caller. This is your On Purpose Talk Radio. Are you have a question for Anita, or are you just listening today? Okay, 214 area code.
Okay. Are you here? I guess not.
I guess
it
you're just
like,
listening.
No,
so
it
you
looks like
put...
he hung up just as I brought him in.
Oh, well, okay.
Right. Sorry.
Yes, it happened.
I probably had
oh, well.
Him waiting too long.
No, it just, maybe it wasn't, whatever. We'll let it go. If you want, for the heck of it, on the top of the board, there's a phone, it'll say what phone number dropped. If you want to send that to me, that would be cool, just for, I may check with them. Probably not, but I'll send that
okay.
to you later. Anyway, so, okay. You know, your next
oh,
thing is, you don't
what?
Know. Oh, try it again
the
then.
The whole time is showing up again. Let me try it again.
Hello?
Okay. Is there someone
Hello?
There?
Area code 214. Are you there?
No. Every time I bring them in, it they disappear. So.
And you're hitting it to red, right?
Yes.
You're putting them to red. Okay. Well, I guess they just want to hold then.
I guess.
We'll just let it be. Okay, that's fine. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being there. Anyway, okay. So, let me see, was there anything else that you wanted to cover that we didn't cover?
Not for me, but boy, it is really fun talking with you. This was really joyful. Thank you.
Good. No problem.
You know,
so
this is... I think there is one thing I do want to say. It's amazing to me what happens when you take a little bit of a jaunt into that sort of maze that's social networking, you know. And you go out there and you try something and very little connected until we connected in a group supporting writers. And so, you know, that was... That was another lesson learned, that you have to get out there and really try new things. So I'm encouraging.
I get most of my guests from social media. You know, one way or another, whether somebody suggests someone or there's a blog I go to or some kind of ad I go to or whatever, because I look at what they're doing and it's like, wow, okay, you're living and breathing what you're teaching or what you're putting out to the world. You're not just in a job or in a career. And like I always say, it can be the person cutting a lawn to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. It doesn't matter. If you're doing what you think you're supposed to be doing and you're enjoying it and loving it, you're living your purpose. You know, and that's why I bring people out here. Because it doesn't have to be a... You know, this rigorous job or this glory job. It has to be you doing what you think you're supposed to be doing in the moment. You know, as I saw, living in the moment.
Right, and the idea that we should punch clocks to do something that's not meaningful to us is really sad, you know. So I'm hoping that somebody heard something today that inspires them.
Right.
Thank you so much.
I like leaving people with affirmations, something to go in through the week. I don't know if you have one, or I can pull one from what was said here, what was carried on the conversation. I'm perfectly willing and able to do that. Your call.
I think I'll share with you what's posted around my house, and you might want to add something to that. There's a place at the table. Take a seat.
Okay. And let's do that just a little bit differently. I know there's a place at the table, and I'll take a seat. Doing those as I ams. So,
yeah.
You know, I know there's a place at the table, and I'm taking a seat. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. If you're willing to put that over on Purpose Talk Radio Conversations in that thread, that would be awesome. Because I won't get to that until tomorrow, whenever I get on the computer again. So, cool. Well, I thank you for being a part of this show and delivering all of your message. I can't let you completely go off the switchboard yet because I'm going to wrap up this, but I can let you go back onto mute if you'd like.
I appreciate you jumping in to handle the switchboard today, too. That's I don't usually have the guests doing that, but again, the purpose was to have the show. So I am grateful to you for that. Thank you. Okay. Well, we were talking to Anita Mirando today about learning, living. You know what? I don't have the title in front of me, but you know what? It doesn't matter. But doing things non-traditionally and still being able to come across, going from a reading and writing disability to be able to become a reading, writing tutor, teacher, coach, so to speak, writing music, doing all this stuff that, traditionally people would not have been able to do or not have allowed her to do. But because of her own persistence and that of the friends and those that she encountered. I keep saying this, it doesn't matter what you think of someone, but giving a kind word might make the difference for them. If you encourage someone, no matter how off you think they are, that might make a difference to their day. I saw something about Robin Williams this week, and how he said, I've done all of this stuff in my career, and I so love what I did. And yet we know that he loved what he did, but there was still this inner turmoil that he suffered. And people do that when they're different, when they're set aside, when they're bullied, when they're not allowed to be who they are. And so for that, I ask you to reach out to people and to be that source of encouragement and happiness sometimes, because you never know what they're going to become. And, hopefully I've had teachers, too, that reached out to me to allow me to excel. And it's great. Those are the teachers that we want in this world. We want all kinds of teachers. We know that because we learn something different from all of them. But you don't have to be an actual teacher to be a teacher. So I encourage you always to teach what you know to whatever age you know. And I learned a lot from my nephews, too. It's pretty funny. Even my 5-year-old nephew, like Anita was saying, she learns from her kindergarten and first grades. So, with all of that being said, I love it, and I am glad to know that this does happen. And, okay, and now I have to tell Anita how to play the closing song because I didn't do that. There's a thing that says, I am who I am closing song on the right-hand side of the switchboard. And hopefully she will find it and can play that, just hit the play button like any other song. Otherwise, we'll just have to kind of end this show and we'll see what happens. But our next show will be either this Friday or a week from Friday. And I thank you all for listening. And otherwise, you can come back on the...
Cindy,
yep.
I see opening I am who I am. Will that work?
That'll work just fine. We'll work with it. So thank you all for listening, and I wish you all soul blessings.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.